This is your AEW Dynamite Strong Island review for Wednesday, May 11, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. Tonight, AEW was back at the UBS Arena next to Belmont Park, exit 26 off the Cross Island Parkway. I know some friends who were at the building tonight. You didn't need to be in the building tonight to know how hot that Long Island crowd was. This was a complete, it was almost like a completely different show tonight. Just the entire vibe of the show, the matches on the show, the energy, the crowd reaction. That crowd in Long Island was amped up. For tonight's show, we had three, Catam 3, Owen Hart Foundation tournament matches here tonight on the show to officially open the men's and the women's tournaments, which included the craziest 10-minute match that I have ever seen. We've seen a lot of really crazy stunt show type matches. We've seen all kinds of extreme rules matches and hardcore matches and matches with tables and ladders and chairs and barbed wire and kendo sticks and thumbtacks and all kinds of crazy shit. Miraculously, this match tonight in the main event actually didn't include blood, which for AEW is kind of surprising. But I don't know that I've ever seen a 10-minute match like the one that we saw tonight in that main event between Darby Allin and Jeff Hardy. And frankly, while I kind of enjoyed it for what it was, I hope to never see another match like that again. What those two guys did, it literally, and Darby sort of foreshadowed this in a video package earlier in the show. But Darby, I think he was shooting when he said that he wanted to end up in the hospital. You had a match in the main event tonight with two men who looked like they were out there on a mission to see who could hurt themselves worse before they both inevitably wind up in a hospital bed. That's what that main event looked like. Who can get more injured than the other? Who can fuck up their body more in the span of 10 minutes? Jeff Hardy or Darby Allin? My money's on Darby Allin, especially after that ridiculous spot off of a ladder, a swanton bomb off of a ladder, down onto Jeff Hardy in a sea of chairs, all lined up in rows on the outside of the ring on the floor. He had to be every bit of 15 feet up in that air. And Darby got some height. And, you know, I have to take something back. I made a comment on the stream. It was either last week or the week before, when I was comparing Darby Allin to Sammy Guevara. And we have seen Sammy Guevara do some really stupid shit in some of his matches. And he always, you know, says, I'm crazy. And then he does some crazy spot, right? And when he did the spot against Scorpio Sky off the ladder in their TNT title match, I think it was a Phoenix Splash off the side of the ladder or 630, whatever it was. And he barely even grazed Scorpio Sky. It looked like he landed right on his head. And I said, the difference between Darby and Sammy, when I watch Darby, it looks like controlled recklessness, whereas Sammy Guevara, when he's out there doing stuff, it is uncontrolled. And he's trying all kinds of new dives and stuff, and one of these days he's going to kill himself. But when I watch Darby, even though he's flying around and he's killing himself, it's a controlled type of recklessness. Well, tonight, we didn't get any controlled type of recklessness. We just got recklessness from Darby Allin in that last match. Jeff Hardy did beat Darby Allin, though. He wins the match. He advances in the tournament. Jeff Hardy will now take on Adam Cole in the next round, who picked up a win over Dax Harwood. And Toni Storm did what she could not do in the Queen's Crown. She got out of the first round. Hey, progress. Toni Storm advances to the next round. She will now wrestle either Dr. Britt Baker or the Joker. And we're only going to have to wait another week, because next week it will be the Joker, whoever that is. And I have an idea. Against Britt Baker in the next round of the Owen Hart tournament. This week was a major rebound show after last week. I said last week's show I just didn't think was very good. It wasn't as fun. It wasn't as interesting as a lot of the other Dynamite episodes have been. But tonight, everything just clicked. And right on time, too, because we're only a few weeks away from one of their biggest pay-per-views of the entire year, one of their biggest shows of the year, Double or Nothing, in Las Vegas. They moved a lot of stories, key stories ahead tonight. We didn't see Thunder Rosa on the show, no women's champion. We got a little video package about, you know, Serena Deeb, and very little focus put on that match. But CM Punk and Hangman Page, they kind of moved things along a little bit there. MJF and Wardlow, we're going to talk about that because the MJF segment was probably the most fun on the entire show. Of course, he was in his homeland tonight, the native of Plainview, Long Island. And just top to bottom, just a really, really, I thought, excellent 2 hours that just breezed by. Complete opposite of last week. Hit that like button if you have not already done so. And Super Chats are open. I'm sure you're already seeing some of them filing on in and filling up your screen every few seconds. So I will read your messages. I'm sure you got a lot to say about tonight's show. Questions, comments, get them on in. Who do you think the Jokers are going to be? Drop a Super Chat. Who do you think the men's and the women's Jokers are going to be in the Owen Hart tournament next week? Because I have an idea. I have two names in mind. But I want to hear from you guys as well. Now, there was one big, I say big, potentially big, bit of news. It's big news in the TV world. But it could potentially be big as it relates to AEW. It's still too early to know exactly what it's going to mean. But it did break earlier this evening about, I think it was a couple of hours before Dynamite went live. Deadline.com reporting that Bret Weitz will be leaving his position as the general manager of TBS, TNT, and True TV. This, is, of course, makes him another casualty of the merger between Warner Media and Discovery. He's worked for Warner Media for a number of years. I think about 14 or 15 years. He's been with the company a while. However, he was named to the position of general manager in October of 2019. That was the very same month that AEW Dynamite premiered on TNT. And that was not a coincidence because he was a very big proponent of AEW. He had a lot to do, not only with AEW getting on TNT, but the show expanding over the years, and obviously now they have Rampage, which that is on TNT. Dynamite is on TBS now. But that was the position that he started at the exact same time that AEW came to the network. And he has been a major ally, major friend of AEW, and a major ally of Tony Khan's, who is now no longer there, or at least he's on his way out. I don't know when his last day is, but he is certainly on his way out. The thing about that is, when you look at the comments, if you go to the Deadline article, and Deadline is a website, it's really a trade industry website, you know, kind of like what any number of these wrestling websites would be to wrestling news, dirt sheets, call it what you want. That's what Deadline is for movies and TV and entertainment. In the comments section earlier, comment after comment after comment from people who know him, who have worked with him, currently work for him under an anonymous name, nothing but praise. You rarely see that, especially when it comes to, you know, television executives. Not one bad word said about this guy. Everybody praising him, praising the kind of executive and leader that he is and how, you know, he cares about his employees. It's a rare thing to find somebody like that. It's a major loss for Warner. It's, you know, a bad omen of what's to come with this Warner and Discovery thing. I don't think it's a bad omen as it relates to AEW. I think AEW should be fine. You know, a lot of the cuts they're making are to scripted programming. AEW is not scripted programming. I think AEW would fall under sports. I don't get the sense that's something that they are unhappy with, and AEW does pretty well for the network. So, again, not any reason if you're an AEW fan, I think, to be, you know, freaking out or anything. But if you're Tony Khan and you're hearing about something like this and you lose a major ally like that, somebody who's been in your corner from day one, that's not the kind of news you want to be hearing. And so who they're going to replace him with, we don't know yet. But anyway, that was breaking just a couple of hours before Dynamite went on the air tonight, and you know how these things go with these mergers and stuff. It takes a while for the new crew to get embedded, and we'll see how they handle things from here on out. But it was good news otherwise for AEW tonight. They opened up with an opening round match. Well, they say quarterfinal, but really this is the official start of the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. It was Dax Harwood of FTR going one-on-one with Adam Cole. I was not expecting this. They showed in the crowd Owen's widow, Martha. Now, I knew she was going to be there, probably with the kids, at Double or Nothing. She's going to be in Vegas to present the trophy, the cup, whatever it is, to the winners. I didn't know that she was going to be at Dynamite tonight. This would be probably the first wrestling show that she's attended, I would imagine, since Owen was working for WWE. In fact, the last time I can remember seeing her on television might have been the Canadian Stampede back in 97 when they had all the Hart family members get in the ring. I remember Martha was there. The kids were just, you know, yay high at that point. I'm not even sure the daughter was there. I know his son Oge was very young at that point. It's been a very long time since she has been to a wrestling show. And it's very cool because I want to put this photo up for you. This was backstage earlier tonight before the show. That is Tony Khan flanked by Owen's kids. So to Tony's right is Owen's son, Oge. Now, you would have seen him if you watched the Dark Side of the Ring special, but my God, I mean, if you were wondering, who's that kid's father? You don't have to wonder. I mean, he's a dead ringer for dad. So that's Oge. And to Tony's left is Owen's daughter, Athena. And to her left is Owen's widow, Martha. I don't know who that woman is on the other end, but very cool. Very cool to see Owen's family, you know, back at a wrestling show, and just to see them together like that, I think is very cool. So again, I wasn't expecting them to be on the show. Oge looks like Solomon. Are we going to get the Solomonster comparisons again? That is not me. I am not related to Owen Hart. Let's not go starting any rumors now. So we had Dax Harwood. He was back wearing the Hart Foundation gear. I think we saw him wear this a few weeks ago. The Hart Foundation logo with the skull. He had his name Dax underneath. So he was wearing his Hart Foundation tights. He tried for the sharpshooter early on. Cole cradled him, though, for a near fall. And then threw him into the corner. And when Harwood went into the corner, he went down, he kind of slid in, and ribs first, right into the ring post. Wrapped himself ribs first right around the post. At that point, Cole worked him over outside the ring, into the ring steps, and into the ring post, heading into a picture-in-picture. We come back from the break. Now you know why I'm such a big Bret Hart fan. Everybody just got, they've just figured out my secret. I'm part of the family. I'm blood. Anyway, back from the break, Harwood took the old Bret Hart chest first turnbuckle bump. I think now it's just going to be a prerequisite in every Dax Harwood match. He's got to do at least one signature Bret Hart bump. So the two of them traded German suplexes. Dax hit the slingshot rebound powerbomb into a sit out for a near fall. Crowd was hot for this, by the way. I mentioned the hot crowd, and this match in particular, this crowd was pretty loud for it. Cole started tuning up the band in the corner. I love this. I got to give a shout out and props to Adam Cole here. This was genius because for a couple of reasons, but the main reason, of course, being that he knows that Dax Harwood is like the biggest Bret Hart fan in the world, but it's also an Owen Hart tournament match. And so what does Adam Cole do? He does what any good heel would do. He starts tuning up the band in the corner because Shawn Michaels is his idol. I mean, he loved working with Shawn Michaels in NXT. So he's in the corner tuning up the band. The fans start booing. I fucking loved that spot. I thought that was great. He goes for the super kick. Harwood had it scouted, though. Hit a crossbody for two. He tried for another one, but this time when he came off with a crossbody, Cole caught him with the super kick on the way down, and he got a close near fall out of it. Dax crucifixed him over for a near fall of his own. Very similar to a spot that we saw in the main event. Cole tried for a Panama Sunrise, but Dax rolled through and came back with a pile driver. Dax went for the sharpshooter attempt. This time he got it. He got the sharpshooter applied. The place comes unglued. Cole, though, kicks him in the ribs, breaks the hold, ends up knocking Harwood off the apron to the floor, and Dax made a loud thud when he hit the floor. He just went smack. Right on the ground, selling the ribs some more. This was also a great spot because now the referee is counting. And Harwood is really going in hard on selling the ribs, and he's, you know, trying to make it back in time. and he gets to his feet. And as the referee hits the count of eight, Harwood is reaching up to try to pull himself into the ring. He collapses on the ground. And I thought, okay, well, they're going to go for the count out finish. That's kind of lame. Had me convinced. So he goes down. Referee just counted eight. Now he increases the count to nine. Harwood immediately gets back to his feet and sprints back into the ring to beat the 10 count. They had me fooled. I thought we were going for the count out finish there. Selling the injury, can't make it back in the ring in time. He tried, but he wasn't able to, but he did make it back inside. Cole applied a sharpshooter of his own. Harwood tried to fight it, but in the end, he couldn't get out of it. He was right in the middle of the ring, and he tapped out. And Adam Cole advances to the next round to meet, it's going to be Jeff Hardy. We didn't know that at the time. He was going to meet the winner of the Darby and Jeff Hardy match. I thought this was a really good match, great choice for an opener, hot crowd. They gave it time, as they should with these tournament matches. You know, they gave Darby and Hardy 10 minutes in the main event. You know what? I'm grateful for that. Darby and Jeff did not need more than 10 minutes. If you gave those guys more than 10 minutes, they would have killed each other. So the less time you gave to them, the better. But a lot of these matches in this tournament, especially as we get deeper in the tournament, I would like to see them be given some time. And then we have the two final matches at the pay-per-view. Those I would expect to be every bit of 15 to 20 minutes. I mean, it's a tournament. You want to give those matches some time. So they gave these guys plenty of time. And I love that somebody won with the sharpshooter. And I knew it wasn't going to be Dax. Dax was not beating Adam Cole. I didn't know if they would have Adam Cole be the one to use the sharpshooter on him, which is like rubbing salt in the wound. That's what they did, and I like it. The Owen Hart tournament. Somebody has to win with a sharpshooter. And I thought that that was a great finish to what was otherwise a very good match. So they cut to a video package in the back. And this is what I was mentioning earlier about what Darby had said. It's Darby talking about his match with Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin are both quite fond of each other. Jeff Hardy is well aware of Darby's career. He was very much looking forward to wrestling him, as Darby was looking forward to wrestling Jeff. Darby did an interview with the New York Post, I believe it was, ahead of tonight's show. There was a lot of AEW talent doing New York media. Tony Khan sat down with one of the local Long Island news channels to do a whole interview. That's where he mentioned they're very likely coming back later this year for another Arthur Ashe Stadium show, although we don't know what, you know, month or what the date is going to be. But Darby did an interview and talked about the match with Jeff and said, look, I was kind of expecting and hoping that it would come later on, that we would slowly build to it and we would have dueling promos back and forth for a few weeks leading into it. Maybe it would be a pay-per-view match. He wasn't expecting to be in the ring with Jeff one-on-one this quickly. I don't think anybody was really expecting it to happen this soon. And it was a written interview, but I could almost hear it in his voice. He was a little disappointed that they didn't have more time to build this up properly, but he basically was saying, all right, well, look, we're getting it now, and so we're going to go out there and we're going to tear the house down. And in this video package here, he talked about the fact that the two of them aren't really wrestlers. They've both talked about how they're not really wrestlers. They look at themselves more as stuntmen, which was on full display in that main event tonight. If you were looking for psychology or story in the main event tonight, then you were shit out of luck. You didn't get any of that in the main event, but you knew that going in. Anybody who watched this show and was expecting some great story in the main event between Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin, you obviously don't know these two men very well and the way that they go out there and work, let alone against each other. I think most people probably would have expected the kind of match that we ended up with. But he said here in this promo that he would be very happy if he ended up in the hospital when this match was over. I think he may have gotten his wish. He also said that he had told Tony Khan, let's just throw the rules out. No rules. Later in the show, they made it official. It was a no rules match between the two of them in the main event. In case you couldn't figure that out based on what they did. We had Hangman Page, the AEW World Champion, out next to do commentary for the next match, which was CM Punk against Long Island's own Long John Silver of the Dark Order. Punk came out wearing a John Tavares New York Islanders jersey. He got booed out of the building for it. He even called for them when he came out on stage. He called for them to cut his theme music so that we can properly hear the booing because the music was drowning out the boos. And he wanted to make sure that everybody heard the booing. So basically, because I know there's a couple people in the chat talking about who's John Tavares. So I've heard the name because I live in New York. And, you know, my brother and one of my good friends are big hockey fans. So I've heard the name before, but, you know, looked it up just to make sure I know exactly the timeline here. So Tavares used to play for the Islanders for many years. I don't know if it was 10 years, but for many years, he played for the New York Islanders. He ended up in free agency, and he went to go play a few years ago for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I believe he still plays for the Maple Leafs. Well, ever since he went into free agency and he left New York, he's basically dead to all of these Islanders fans. I mean, at the mere mention of his name, they will boo the shit out of this man. So, yes, that is why Punk knew exactly what he was doing, wearing a Tavares jersey coming out tonight. And he got the appropriate reaction for doing so. Punk wasn't received well last time he was on Long Island either. Remember, he came out on the last show at the UBS Arena, which was the first one that they ever did. And he got booed then too, because he was feuding with MJF at the time. And so the crowd booed him then. So now he's just having fun with it now. But anyway, the strategy for Punk early on, he was trying to stop John Silver from building any kind of momentum. Because Silver, when he gets on a roll, man, he's small. But when he gets on a roll, he gets all fired up. You can't stop this guy. So that was Punk's strategy early on in the match. And he connected with a lariat leading into the commercial. We come back from the break. Silver drops Punk with a brainbuster. Got a very close near fall out of it. He stumbled on the ropes a little bit. He went for a tornado DDT, and when he jumped up on that middle rope, he kind of slipped. He held himself, so he didn't fall on it. You know, he didn't fall down or anything. But yes, he slipped on the ropes, but he quickly recovered and hit the move anyway. Punk stopped Silver with a high kick and a short arm clothesline. And then he looked over at Hangman, who was sitting all the way over there with the announcers. And Punk went out onto the apron, and he launched himself, as Hangman does, over the top rope with his own buckshot lariat. This did not look nearly as crisp as the buckshot that Hangman Page delivers. This was not a good-looking buckshot lariat. But he did his own version of the buckshot lariat and won the match, pinned John Silver. This did not sit well with Hangman Page. This man stole his finish and made it look inferior. So Hangman got up from the announce desk, put his headset down. He walked down to the ring, got nose to nose with Punk. Punk took a microphone and he asked Hangman, he goes, "Are you mad? Are you mad, bro?" Said, "Last week it sounded like you were taking all of this personally." He goes, "I don't know why these people hate me so much." He goes, "With me, it's not personal. I don't take any of this personally. It's just business." He said a few weeks ago in one of his promos, he talked about how sometimes he wakes up in the morning and he looks in the mirror and asks himself, "Am I a good guy?" He said this morning he asked himself, "Am I a champion?" And he said the answer is yes. And he said that last week Hangman said he was going to destroy him. He said, "Well, I just destroyed your boy. And at the end of the night at Double or Nothing, I'm going to shake your hand one way or the other. And whether you're conscious or unconscious, I'm going to shake your hand." And he put his hand out to go shake Hangman's hand. Hangman instead flipped him the bird, just like that, and he walked off. I like this. Hangman, I wish he would have actually said something. He was basically silent for this promo here. He let Punk do all the talking, and then he just flipped him off and walked away. So it would have been nice to get maybe a little more back and forth on the mic. I would imagine we'll get that either next week or the week after. But I like the intensity between these two. I said when Hangman had that promo a few weeks ago where he was basically almost like a heel, and it looked like maybe he was going to play the role of heel in this match. Tonight, it was like fucking bizarro world, because CM Punk comes out, and now he's the one being booed out of the building. Now, this wouldn't happen in any other city. Only on Long Island, and only because he was getting the cheap, you know, the cheap heel heat off the sports reference. Any other building, CM Punk is going to get a hero's welcome. But tonight, it felt like the roles completely were flipped, and now it's like, well, who's gonna play what role at the pay-per-view? They may just end up going in there and being their usual, you know, babyface selves and just let the crowd choose. To me, that's the way you go about doing it. The people in Vegas are going to cheer whoever they want to cheer for. Maybe it'll be split 50-50. Maybe it'll be more in favor of Punk. So maybe, you know, they won't necessarily, one of them won't necessarily lean in the heel direction more than the other. Because now they've both had two different segments here, two different weeks, where each man could conceivably come off as playing the heel role in this match. So we have, what, 2 weeks left? Where are we now? I think we have two or three more Dynamites left before Double or Nothing, and we'll see. I'm sure we're going to get the face-to-face promo, maybe a contract signing between them. But tonight it was Punk doing the talking. He came off very heelish. I like heel Punk. I was digging heel CM Punk. It's too soon to do that because, again, I still think the story should be Punk wins the title, whether it's this month or, you know, maybe next month, and eventually MJF beats him for the championship. I think Punk needs to stay babyface at least that long to win the title and drop it to MJF. But I like the heel tendencies from Punk here on this show. We had a backstage segment with Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Rebel in the back with Tony Schiavone. Baker complained about having to wrestle the Joker, not knowing who her opponent was going to be. She sounds like Seth Rollins now. But then she said that Jamie Hayter would beat Toni Storm tonight. She pointed out that if both she and Hayter win, that they would face each other in the tour. Well, I think it was Schiavone who brought that up. But it was brought up that if Jamie Hayter were to beat Toni Storm tonight, that she would wrestle Britt Baker if Baker could win her match. And Baker basically just kind of played it off like, well, you know, the best woman will win. And she looked over at Reba almost like a wink. Jamie say, oh, we don't need to talk about that right now. We don't need to talk about it because it's not going to happen, as we now know. We then had the in-ring debut of Danhausen, the AEW in-ring debut of Danhausen, one-on-one with Tony Nese, with smart Mark Sterling in his corner. But, you know, Mark Sterling is quickly becoming one of the MVPs on AEW television. He had back-to-back segments on this show. He was in the corner of Tony Nese. He was back out after that as the lawyer, the official legal representation for MJF. He's got Jade Cargill, who probably at this moment is the best booked champion in the entire company. And now we know he's going to be wrestling on the buy-in pre-show, which I'll get to here in a second. I'm telling you, Mark Sterling very quietly has become one of the MVP figures on these shows. So Danhausen comes down. Justin Roberts introduces him at 300 pounds. So he's out here thinking he's a super heavyweight like Hardcore Holly back in the day. Danhausen went to go put a curse, the Danhausen curse, on Tony Nese. So we were about to get comedy when Mark Sterling jumped up on the apron to distract him. As he distracted Danhausen, Tony Nese came in and absolutely just clobbered him. Knocked him down in the corner. Nese hits the ropes, comes off, and hits a running knee strike to Danhausen, who is sitting down in the corner. He drags Danhausen out of the corner, and he pins him in 30 seconds. One and done. Tony Nese makes short work of Danhausen. After the match, Mark Sterling tells Nese that Danhausen got an entrance, and he didn't, which is true. They were already in the ring. Danhausen got the entrance. Tony Nese didn't get the entrance. So he was trying to piss him off, and that led to Nese hitting a second running knee in the corner. Nese then pulled down his knee pad. He was setting up for a third knee strike when all of a sudden we hear the theme music for Hook, who got some screen time at WrestleMania Backlash last Sunday during the Baron Corbin Madcap Moss match. These are the things that I notice when I'm watching a match between Baron Corbin and Madcap Moss. I'm looking for everything else that's going on. I'm paying attention to everything but the match. And so the first thing I notice when they spill out to ringside is that right there on camera in the front row is somebody with a Hook t-shirt. Dead view of the camera. I'm telling you, we got hookers all over the place. We got hookers in every single company. We had plenty of them back in the 80s, especially at the hotels. But we have lots of hookers. We have hookers in the chat right now. Every week I see you guys in there. I know you're here. So anyway, Hook comes out, and he gets into the ring, and Tony Nese bails with Mark Sterling. They want no part of Hook. Danhausen extends his hand. He wants to shake hands with Hook. And Hook looks around. The fans want him. They want him to shake Danhausen's hand. And Hook reaches out, and he accepts the gesture. And Hook shakes hands, or shakes Hooks, with Danhausen. And everybody cheers. This is what everybody wanted to see. Everybody in the building was happy to see the two of them shake hands. So Hookhausen is officially a thing now. We knew it would be. It is official. Hookhausen is a thing. And now we found out later in the show that it's going to be on the buy-in pre-show at Double or Nothing. It's going to be Hook and Danhausen taking on Tony Nese and Smart Mark Sterling. I'm actually glad they didn't play this match up for comedy, which is what they could have done. Tony Nese needs all the credibility that he can muster before he steps into the ring with Hook or any kind of serious challenger. Tony Nese goes out there, and he's a great athlete. He calls himself the premier athlete. He looks like $1 million. His abs have fucking abs. I have those abs, too. I have the same abs that Tony Nese does. They just happen to be, you know, they're protected by a layer of fat, but they're there. But the guy looks great. But he's right. He doesn't get an entrance. He barely gets television time. So now you want him to go into the ring with Hook, but you're going to put him in the ring with Danhausen and do what exactly? How else was this going to go other than the way that it did? I'm glad they didn't play it up for comedy beyond the initial him trying to put a curse on him, because he needed to beat him quickly and decisively going into the match with Hook, the eventual match with Hook. So I was glad to see that. We had the contract signing. That was the next segment after this. Be nice to Tony Nese and the chill. Look at all the hate towards Tony Nese, a modern-day Lance Storm. Actually, that's a great compliment. I think that's a great compliment. Show us your abs, Solo. Oh, it's gonna take a big super chat for that. But we had a contract signing segment with MJF and Wardlow. This was probably my favorite thing on the entire show. This was the contract signing where MJF would let us know his conditions. If Wardlow wants the match with him at Double or Nothing, he has to agree to certain conditions that MJF had promised. And that was the whole purpose of this segment. Wardlow was led down to the ring, no theme music. He was handcuffed. Led down to the ring by security. It was a long table in the ring. They had balloons in the background. Wardlow took a seat at the end of one end of the table. All the security geeks lined up in the background. Sean Spears was there. He was dressed in all white. He even had a white steel chair. Smart Mark Sterling for the second consecutive segment on this show. The hardest working man in AEW. Second hardest working. The second hardest working man in AEW. The first hardest working is Tony Schiavone. Mark Sterling is the second hardest working. He was out there as well. But before MJF came out, they aired a video. They aired a fantastic Dark Side of the Ring parody video. I perked up at first when they put the Dark Side logo and I heard Chris Jericho's voice, because I thought for a second that they had cut to a preview, like a commercial for a fourth season, which they have since come out and said there will be a fourth season. They just haven't said when, because all the rumors came out that the show was canceled or it wasn't being renewed, because Vice had announced their schedule for next season and Dark Side of the Ring was not on the schedule, and nothing had been said about it. So people just assumed, well, that must mean the show is canceled. Well, Vice and certain people came out and made it very clear that Dark Side will come back. So for a brief second there, I thought that this was maybe a preview for the actual season, but it wasn't. It was a parody. And it was narrated by Chris Jericho, which was great because he is the actual narrator for the show. They just happen to have him under contract in AEW. But it was a little ridiculous if you consider his history with MJF, that he would be doing this parody video that was fully paid for, bought and paid for by MJF. And I appreciate the fact they took a moment. Jericho paused as he began narrating this and said, wait a minute, is this for MJF? He goes, I hate this guy's guts. He's an asshole. Why would I do this video for him? And then somebody off camera tells him, wait, how much is he paying me? Oh, okay. So at least they stuck that in there to logically explain why Chris Jericho would be okay doing such a positive, glowing video for MJF. Little thing, but I appreciated them acknowledging that. And then he starts narrating it, and it played like an actual episode of Dark Side of the Ring would. And they had comments in here from Taz. They had comments in here from Jake Roberts. They had comments in here from Barry Horowitz, of all people. Barry Horowitz, who talked about, and actually he was described on screen as legendary Jewish wrestler. That makes two legendary Jewish wrestlers on the show tonight. And a legendary Jewish podcaster as well. So Horowitz was heeling on Sean Dean being a jobber. Captain Sean Dean has a win. Might have more than one, actually. He might have two. But he has at least one win over MJF, caused by Wardlow, in one of those cases. And so he was kind of heeling on Sean Dean and talking about the fact that MJF lost to this jobber. Anyway, I thought including him in there was pretty funny. And as a wrestling fan going back to the mid to late 80s, I have a lot of memories. I popped when I saw Barry Horowitz. I'm sure there's a lot of younger fans or newer fans who have no idea. They're like, Barry Horowitz, who the fuck is that? Was he like a production guy or something? Barry Horowitz is a legend. Don't be putting no hate. You put some respect on that man's name. He's been doing this for a very long time. They actually gave him a little push of his own in 95. Since they weren't going to do fuck all with Chris Candido, he actually got a win over Skip of the Body Donnas and got a little mini push there in 1995. He used to come out to Hava Nagila. He should be in the Hall of Fame. If they ever have a jobber wing of the Hall of Fame, Barry Horowitz is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I got my first three right there in no particular order. You got to have Iron Mike Sharp in there. You got to have Barry Horowitz in there. And you got to have Dwayne Gilbert. It's got to be in the Hall of Fame. You got to get that wing in there one day. But the entire video painted Wardlow as the villain for handing the Dynamite Diamond Ring to CM Punk in his match with MJF at Revolution. That was the whole point of this. So I thought this was fantastic. So MJF comes out, and he gets a big pop. He's wearing an Islanders jersey, not the Tavares jersey, but he's wearing a regular Islanders jersey. And he's fist bumping all the fans, all the Long Island fans. And it's just comical to me because, and this was, I felt the same way the last time they were on Long Island, but, you know, he's out there playing babyface and everything. And, you know, at one point he was heeling on the crowd by pointing up to the cheap seats, and he made a comment that all you people sitting up there, you obviously are too poor to afford, you know, good seats. But I mean, aside from that one comment, he comes off as so disingenuous, and yet the people cheer for him anyway. Even though he's the biggest scumbag in the entire company, he's from Long Island. He said good things about our city, our town, and so therefore we must cheer this man. It makes me wonder if these same people, like, you could be a fucking axe murderer and, you know, you, fucking Charles Manson comes out. But if they said that Charles Manson was from, you know, Decatur, Illinois or something, and they brought the television show to, I don't know why they would have a television show in Decatur, Illinois. I don't even know if they have any arenas in Decatur, Illinois. But let's just say hypothetically, all the people in Decatur, Illinois would cheer for Charles Manson. Yay! Because he's from our town. He's from our city. These people are sick. Come on, people. If you're a bad person, you're a bad person. You can't just pick and choose based on where they were born. So MJF is getting a loud chant here from the crowd. And Wardlow got boos. The mere mention of his name. The mere mention of Wardlow's name, that man got boos. MJF said that their story was like David and Goliath. He called himself the salt of the earth. He said he was a Jewish boy from the Holy Land, and he didn't mean Israel. He was talking about Long Island, New York. He told the crowd that under no circumstances should they get out of their seats and boo Wardlow out of the building when he speaks. He gave the floor to Wardlow, and like sheep, they all booed Wardlow. And MJF acted like he couldn't hear what he was saying over all the loud booing that was going on. Finally, he said he was ready to talk about his conditions for their match at Double or Nothing. And he said that Wardlow is about to go through what he is about to go through is payment for all the bad things that he did to the American roller coaster. Cody Rhodes. Got a Cody Rhodes mention on the show. He also mentioned 2024 in here, as he has done many times before. That is the expiration of his contract, January 1st, 2024. And he said there's a guy in the back right now who wants him to stop talking about it. Wink, wink to Tony Khan. So he moved away from that. And he said that if Wardlow wants a match with him, he's going to have to get whipped by MJF 10 times. And he proceeded to count up to 9. Everybody was wanting him when he would say 3 times, what, 4 times, what, all the way up to 9. And then he stopped. And he looked over at Sean Spears, and he let Sean Spears do his old 10 hand gesture that he used to do when he was in WWE, and the crowd chanted along. Says if Wardlow can deal with that, then he'll have to wrestle Sean Spears after that in a steel cage match. But not just any ordinary steel cage match. He would have to wrestle him in a cage match where MJF would be the special referee. And only then, if Wardlow takes his lashes and then he wins the cage match against Sean Spears, then and only then would he get his match with MJF at Double or Nothing. But he says, you know, now that we know what you get if you win Double or Nothing, if Wardlow wins, he breaks free from the contract that he's under with MJF. MJF says, though, now you're going to find out what you get if you lose. If you lose at Double or Nothing, you can never, ever sign a contract with AEW. And while I can understand in storyline, let's think about this in storyline terms. If you're MJF and you want this guy out of your life and out of this company, logically speaking, you would make the match effectively loser leaves town, or you would have a stipulation that says if you lose, you're gone. So I never have to look at you or deal with you ever again. It makes sense. But it also makes the match incredibly predictable. Most people probably would have had Wardlow winning the match anyway, but maybe not. Maybe they thought MJF would somehow find a way to cheat and it would lead to a rematch. This just gives away the finish. This just gives away the finish. That's the only thing about this I didn't like, is that sometimes they, and WWE does this too, they will go the extra step and add a stipulation that is completely unnecessary. The stipulation being that if you win, you break free from the contract. All you needed for that match, you didn't have to add any other stipulation. That's the only step that that match needed. Because then it's not as predictable. Maybe MJF cheats to win, he finds a way to win somehow their first match, or Wardlow wins and he breaks free from the contract. It's a completely unnecessary add-on to the match. That's the only thing about this that I didn't like. So Wardlow doesn't say anything to any of this. And MJF tells him to sign the contract. Wardlow grabs a pen and he goes to sign. He can't sign because his hands are cuffed in front of him. He can't sign the contract. So MJF tells the security geeks to take the cuffs off. You can imagine what happened next. Wardlow stands up. He signs the contract. MJF says, all right, Piggy, sit down and cuff him again. They go to put the cuffs back on him. And predictably, we all know how this ended. Wardlow beats the fucking crap out of every single one of these security goofballs in the ring. One punch knocks this guy down, knocks that guy down, knocks this guy down, knocks that guy down. Eventually, he knocks Sean Spears down. Until finally, the only two men left in the ring are MJF and Wardlow. There's nowhere for MJF to go. He tries to bolt. MJF is halfway. He's hanging out of the ring, and Wardlow grabs him. But here comes Smart Mark, the second hardest working man in AEW. He jumps on Wardlow's back. MJF scampers off. And the segment ends with Wardlow giving Mark Sterling a powerbomb through the long table that was left behind in the ring. And that is how this segment ended. I thought this entire segment was a lot of fun from start to finish, from the Dark Side parody to MJF's reaction that he got and the way that they finished things in the end. Wardlow ends up looking strong. People are dying to see MJF just get absolutely wrecked by this guy. So I thought this entire segment was a huge home run, and MJF had the people in that building eating out of his hand. He had control of that crowd. He's a master of his craft with a microphone in his hand. Guy's 25 years old, 26 now maybe. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to do in a short period of time. What can he do in the next 10 years? Right? Makes you wonder. We had a Samoa Joe promo. This is in a pre-taped video package talking about his ongoing rivalry and feud with Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and the big guy. And he was running down Jay Lethal and talking about he first vows to win the Owen Hart tournament because Joe is facing the Joker in the next round. He is in the tournament. And so he made it very clear, I'm going to win the Owen, and then I'm going to refocus back on you guys. And Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, they made it very clear, none of them are the Joker. Satnam Singh is not the Joker. Sanjay's not the Joker. Jay Lethal isn't the Joker. So we know that. We know that those guys are not in the tournament, which begs the question, who's the Joker? We had Ricky Starks against Jungle Boy for the FTW Championship. The Coug says the Jokers are Cesar Romero and Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson is the second best Joker. Put Mark Hamill on the side. I'm talking live action. Jack Nicholson is my second favorite Joker, the second best Joker of any of the Batman shows or series. I'll let you figure out who number one is. You already know what my favorite movie of all time is. You can pretty much figure it out. So Ricky Starks and Jungle Boy, I thought this was well worked technically. It never really got into that next gear. Jungle Boy countered the Rochambeau attempt into a cradle, went for a rebound lariat, but he ran into a spear for a near fall. He locked on the snare trap, which forced Ricky to the ropes. Starks went over to the timekeeper's table, picked up his FTW title, and he looked like he was ready to just bail. He was going to go to the back. When he turned around, though, he ran into Swerve Strickland, who had walked down to the ring and was basically saying, no, you're not going anywhere. So the referee comes outside. And this was, I agree with Jim Ross on this one. So the referee goes out to the floor to talk to Swerve Strickland to try to tell him to go to the back. All right. Now, Jungle Boy in the ring has rolled up Ricky Starks. He's got the visual pin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's got this man dead to rights. He's got him beat in the middle of the ring. Where's the referee? The referee wasn't bumped. No, the referee is on the outside yelling at Swerve Strickland, who never set foot in the ring. He came down to the ring, but he never got in the ring. He never touched anybody. He never interfered. The referee is on the outside. He's admonishing Swerve, yelling at him, telling him to go to the back. Meanwhile, this guy has the match won. Jim Ross is freaking out on commentary, talking about what is the referee doing? He's got a job. He should be in the ring. It's not his job to be on the outside of the ring. Common sense from Jim Ross. I agree with JR. He sounded legitimately beside himself about this. What is the referee doing? It's not his business to be on the outside. If Swerve gets in the ring, that's a different story. But he never did. So Jungle Boy had the match won, but unfortunately he got fucked by this stupid referee here. And in the end, Starks did manage to hit the Rochambeau finally on his second attempt, and he got the pin to retain his FTW title. After the match, Christian Cage and Luchasaurus, they walk down to the ring. Now Swerve is standing in the aisleway. He's got his back turned. He's looking at the ring. As Christian walks by, he blows right by Swerve. He kind of knocked into his arm on his way into the ring, like he intentionally bumped him. And this didn't make Swerve very happy. He got up on the ring apron. He was kind of mouthing off at Christian, a Luchasaurus in the ring. And we had a little bit of a standoff here. No blows were exchanged. No strikes were thrown. Here comes Keith Lee. I believe Jim Ross on commentary said, Keith Lee looking great. Looks like he's lost a few pounds. I don't know what he's looking at. Keith Lee looks no different than he looked to me 2 weeks ago. He's as big as I've ever seen him. He's, you know, he's a big man. I wouldn't want to mess with him, but the idea that Keith Lee has lost some pounds from the last time we saw him, maybe from a distance I couldn't see it. He didn't look any different to me. I don't know what Jim Ross was looking at. Keith Lee is a big boy. So Keith Lee came out. We had a standoff here with all these guys. So Powerhouse Hobbs had come out during all of this to kind of celebrate with Ricky Starks. So on one side of the ring outside, you had Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. In the ring, you had Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. And outside the ring, you had Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. All kind of staring each other down, having a bit of a standoff. That's how the segment ended with all of them. Until Christian was left with Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy was looking off into the crowd, very disappointed, very upset at how the match ended. They did a slow tease with Christian as he walked up behind Jungle Boy. We've seen other little subtle teases. He's made digs at him on commentary. So you know the heel turn is coming. It's just a matter of when. I thought maybe, oh, what's going to happen here? But he tapped him on the shoulder. Gave him a hug, said everything's going to be okay. And that is how the segment came to an end. So it looks like to me we're going to get a triple threat for the tag team titles at Double or Nothing. It may be Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs, Jurassic Express, Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland for the AEW tag team titles. That's not official yet. I'm going to guess that's going to be the match. I'm going to guess we have new tag team champions. And I'm also going to go ahead and say the Christian is going to turn heel, and he's going to turn heel on Jungle Boy. Now, could he cost them the match, or is it going to be a case where they lose and he's just tired of being associated with fucking losers and he attacks them when the match is over? I think Christian costs Jurassic Express the AEW tag team titles at Double or Nothing. And we end up with heel Christian, who can then feud with Jungle Boy. I'm ready for heel Christian. Christian as a heel is great. Christian as a babyface can also be great, but Christian as a heel, that's where Christian, I think, is at his best. And Christian hasn't been doing anything. Christian has been a background bit player now for a while. Now, I'm not saying he should be front and center every week. They've got an abundance of talent on the AEW roster, more talent than Tony Khan has television time for. And you do want to build most of your key stories and angles around your younger crew. People like a Darby Allin, people like Hangman Page or MJF or Sammy Guevara, people like that. Christian shouldn't necessarily be the focal point, but my God, you could be doing more than what you're doing with him. But do it as a heel. And let him feud with Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy's one of those young pillars. He could get the rub by working a program with Christian. You don't think those two won't go out there and have a fucking kick-ass match on a pay-per-view? You don't think Christian and Jungle Boy could open the show at All Out or something like that and tear the house down? Come on. That's where I think this is headed. We had the Jericho Appreciation Society out next to give a victory speech of some kind. Yeah, let me go back to Christian for a second now that we're talking about Christian. And Christian now, Christian's got to be, what, 47, probably around there, 47 or so years old. You know, Christian, when I saw him in that match with, both matches, really, with Kenny Omega last year, but especially the match they had on Rampage where Christian won the Impact World title, the guy can still go. But it still bothers me. I can't, you know, forget why he wanted to leave WWE in the first place in 2005. And what really made him leave? Obviously, Vince McMahon thought he had an ugly face. We've heard that story before, the blue dot story. I think JBL maybe was the one who told it, but you know, Vince McMahon at one point had this idea he was going to superimpose a giant blue dot over Christian's face on TV, and that would become like a recurring funny angle or whatever, because he legitimately hated Christian's face. I don't know what it was about Christian's face that Vince McMahon just hated. But there was a period in 2005 where there had been multiple segments and teases of something, a match, a program, a title program with Christian and John Cena. And I was going down the YouTube rabbit hole recently and I had stumbled on some of the Christian and John Cena stuff and it just reminded me about this all over again. What a missed opportunity that was. The people wanted to see it. They wanted to see Christian and John Cena. That could have been something. That could have been a program. The people would have bought it. They would have been into it. But Vince McMahon just never, he never believed in him that much. He never saw him at that level. And so instead, we ended up with Jericho and Cena instead, which all that led to was Jericho saying, you know what? I'm burned out. I'm leaving. And he left the company for 2 years. What a missed opportunity not to do something with Cena and Christian in 2005. So just mentioning Christian, and again, seeing some of that stuff in the last week or so, going back and watching some of those segments, just kind of, it's one of those missed opportunities. We could probably make a laundry list of them, but it's just one of those missed opportunities that never was. And he probably would have stuck around and not left for TNA, you know, had they given him, not even the title necessarily, but, you know, given him the chance to work with a top guy like Cena, I think he would have delivered. So we had the Jericho Appreciation Society out there for a victory speech of some kind. Angelo Parker welcomed the entire AEW Galaxy. That's their new thing now. It's the AEW Galaxy because they're sports entertainment. So it's the AEW Galaxy. He welcomed them out for their speech. Jericho noted that he is technically from the area. He was born on Long Island. He was born in Manhasset. But he moved away very quickly because this place is a dump. He threatened a fan in the crowd with a fireball because I'm a wizard. That's so fucking terrible. I got to get rid of that name. He's got to get rid of that name. He's a wizard. He addressed Eddie Kingston, who we haven't seen since he had that fireball thrown in his face. And he brought up Eddie's wife. And he basically said something to the effect of, you know, if your wife is having issues or can't get over, you know, what happened, just send her my way. Right? And it got a ooh from the crowd. All of a sudden, John Moxley's music hits. He comes out from the crowd. Jericho points out the fact, you know, what are you doing here? We've got more people. You're just one guy. You're outnumbered here. So then we hear Bryan Danielson's music, and he comes out from the tunnel. Out of one tunnel, William Regal comes out of the other. We have Danielson. We have Regal. We have Wheeler Yuta. So now the entire Blackpool Combat Club is here. But Jericho once again points out the numbers are still in their favor. You guys have four. Well, three, you count Regal, it's four. You guys only have four. We've got five. You guys are still outnumbered. All of a sudden, on the apron, behind them, they don't see them right away. It's Santana, it's Ortiz, and it's Eddie Kingston, who's got makeup on his face showing burns around his eye. So now Jericho's group are the ones who are completely outnumbered. All of the other wrestlers pile into the ring. A big brawl breaks out. They're beating the crap out of Jericho and his crew. And that is how the segment ended in the ring until Jericho is out on the floor and William Regal is there. And Regal, with the power of the punch, how did Jim Ross not think power of the punch? I know the man is in his 70s now, but he was literally doing commentary in WWE when Regal's entire gimmick was the power of the punch. Regal, when he was the fucking GM or whatever his role was at that time, in his office every week, in a glass case, he had his brass knuckles on display, like some kind of trophy or a baseball or something. It's the first thing I thought of, and nobody mentioned it on commentary. The power of the punch. One punch, and he knocks down Chris Jericho. And for the people who were worried that, oh my God, I hope this doesn't mean Regal is going to wrestle. Oh my God, yeah, I don't want to see him back in the ring. Regal is not getting back in the ring. Regal cannot physically wrestle. He cannot get cleared. He had some kind of a fusion in his neck years ago. He's not wrestling. He's not a cripple, okay? He could throw a punch. He might even be able to take a small bump. But William Regal is not wrestling. So do not assume that just because he threw one punch in this segment, it means he's going to wrestle a match. He's going to be on the show next week going face-to-face with Jericho. Like I said, he might take a bump. Maybe he gets knocked down. Maybe he takes a punch. William Regal is not going to wrestle. He cannot physically wrestle. But Moxley, Danielson, Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. This is how I envision this. We have Double or Nothing coming up. Moxley, Danielson, Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. That's five. Against Jericho, Hager, Daniel Garcia, and 2.0. 5-on-5. 10-man tag, Double or Nothing, which then leads to Blood and Guts. Probably is a TV special on Dynamite next month. That's how I see this playing out. You have enough players there. You do 5-on-5. Now, Wheeler Yuta would be the guy who's sort of left out here. He's the odd man out. Yeah, but Yuta can be occupied feuding with somebody else or defending his Ring of Honor Pure title. I mean, he doesn't have to be involved in this. You want to keep it an even 5-on-5, that's how you do it. You do Jericho and his boys against Danielson, Moxley, Santana, Ortiz, and Kingston. You come out of Double or Nothing. You can't do Blood and Guts at Double or Nothing because then you're going to have two rings side by side for the entire show. I don't think they're doing that. You save that for TV. That could be your TV gimmick like they did the first time. It was Cinco de Mayo last year when they did the first Blood and Guts. I think we get our second Blood and Guts on TV very soon. And also, I want it because I'm waiting for William Regal to be on TV and shout Blood and Guts the way that he used to shout War Games on NXT. Instead of War Games, he'll shout Blood and Guts. And that's how the challenge is laid out. If that's not what this is leading to, then I don't even know what we're doing here. This has to be leading to the announcement of Blood and Guts and Regal being the one to lay down the stipulation. I'd be surprised if he does it next week, though, in his face-to-face with Jericho. Just because to do Blood and Guts, you need the two rings. I just don't see them having two rings side-by-side in Vegas for Double or Nothing. But I do think it's going to be coming soon. We had Tony Storm one-on-one with Jamie Hayter in the first official match in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament on the women's side. We had a vicious twisting snap suplex on the floor by Jamie Hayter that took place during, because they went to a break like a minute into this. And so coming out of the break, they showed a replay of it where she gave Tony Storm this snap suplex on the floor. It looked really good. In the ring, Tony hit a tornado DDT off the ropes, and then she hit another tornado DDT. This one was outside the ring on the floor. Back inside, Storm hit a big crossbody for a near fall. Hayter came back with a Uranage into a backbreaker across the knee. Well, it was meant to be, I think it was meant to be fully across the knee. And she only kind of glazed her knee a little bit. Glazed? Grazed? I meant to say grazed, like a cow. Why did I say glazed? I'm thinking of donuts now. Why am I thinking of donuts? Anyway. So Tony comes back with a German suplex. Hayter recovers and hits a rock bottom on the ring apron. One woman would gain the advantage, and immediately the other woman would come right back. So they were going back and forth, pretty evenly matched here. Hayter hit a superplex, held on to try for what I can only think would be maybe a Falcon Arrow or something, the Seth Rollins spot. But Tony rolled through for an inside cradle, only got two. And then Tony won with what appeared to be a bit of a botched pile driver. She didn't get all of it, as Jim Ross would sometimes say. But she got enough of it to get the win. Now, Excalibur on commentary called it Storm Zero. It was not Storm Zero. I don't know why he called it Storm Zero. That's not what this was. Maybe she was thinking she was going to go for it, but there was no Storm Zero here. It was a very, what I would call a short kind of sitting pile driver. But a pile driver is a pile driver. A pile driver, you're dropping your opponent on their head and neck. So it is believable as a finish. It just didn't look very good. Which is unfortunate because I thought the rest of this was very good. I thought it was a physical match between the two of them. We've got a few physical women's matches recently. I talked about Charlotte and Ronda Rousey from WrestleMania Backlash. And that I thought was a much better match than their WrestleMania match. But I said it was a very physical match. When the match was over, you know, these women had welts all over their bodies. And you could see on Toni Storm, even in this match, you know, she was kind of bloody on her chest when they were chopping each other. So these women, yeah, they worked each other over pretty good, but it was the right outcome. And as I said at the beginning of the stream, Toni Storm did what she could not do in the Queen's Crown last year. She got out of the first round. Instead of losing in 2 minutes to Zelina Vega, she has beaten Jamie Hayter in a hard-fought match, and she's moving on. Moving on to the semifinal round against either Britt Baker or the Joker, whomever that might be. And then we came to the main event. Darby Allin gets his dream match. That's what he called it. I think that term gets thrown around way too much these days, but the reason I had put it in the original title and it was in the artwork, that's a quote directly from the interview that I mentioned that Darby gave to the New York Post. He said that his dream opponent would be Jeff Hardy. For him, of course. I mean, he basically models himself after Jeff Hardy. He probably grew up watching Jeff Hardy. He was a little kid, jumping off his couch at home, jumping off his piano, I think he said in the interview. Darby had a piano at home, apparently. He's jumping off his piano doing bumps because he used to see Jeff Hardy do the same thing on TV. So yes, for him, it's a dream opponent. And for a lot of fans, it's a match that they have been waiting to see. Well, here it is. Darby Allin one-on-one against Jeff Hardy in an Owen Hart tournament match, first round. Anything goes rules. It was made official. Tony Khan made it official. No rules. Do whatever you want. There must be a winner here in this match. This got off to a hot start. If you thought that they were going to have a collar and elbow tie-up to start this match, some chain wrestling, maybe with an actual chain. Otherwise, you weren't getting chain wrestling. You weren't getting technical wrestling. You weren't getting a story. You weren't getting psychology. You got two guys who went out there to have a demolition derby. That's all this was. So if you're not into the stunt matches that are just stunts for the sake of stunts, then this was not the match for you. But for everybody else, you had to know exactly what this was going to be. I enjoyed it for what it was. The spectacle of it. Right out of the gate, Darby catches Jeff with a shotgun dropkick in the corner. Jeff rolls out to the floor. Darby hits the ropes, and he absolutely demolished Jeff with his suicide dive through the middle and the bottom rope. I mean, he just torpedoed himself right into Jeff Hardy. He took a hard bump, did Jeff, with this little bastard bouncing off him. So now as Jeff is on the floor, probably trying to catch his breath because he had the breath knocked out of his lungs, doesn't know where he is. Darby is not slowing down. Now, Darby, by the way, had Sting out there in his corner. Matt Hardy was out there in Jeff's corner. So they're out there watching all this happening. Sting is probably watching this going, man, you know, and I thought I'm crazy doing balcony dives at 63 years old. This kid's out of his fucking mind. Darby goes under the ring. He pulls out chairs. He's lining them all up next to each other at ringside, side by side. He's creating this like line of ladders on the floor, not ladders, but line of chairs on the floor. Jeff, though, drops Darby face first onto the ring steps. There was a great flying clothesline in here because Jeff then dragged the ring steps over a little bit to a different part of the floor. And at that point, they were still, you know, it was not, the steps were not on their side. They were overturned onto their side a little bit later on. They weren't here. It was just the steps. And Jeff did this great step up clothesline, almost took Darby's head off his shoulders. It looked really good. Jeff got a twist of fate in the ropes, and then he pulls out a giant ladder from under the ring, just as they're cutting to the final picture-in-picture break of the show. How are you going to cut to a commercial when Jeff Hardy is pulling a ladder out from under the ring? But that's what they did. They cut to a commercial. They come back from break, and this was just absolute insanity is what this was. The ladder is in the ring. Jeff Hardy, who had control of the match before the break, is now very much not in control. Jeff Hardy is on the outside of the ring. He's laid out across all of those chairs that Darby had set up earlier in the match. He's laying there. The ladder is in the ring, and Darby Allin has climbed. He has ascended to the top of this ladder, and he has got to be every bit of 15 feet in the air. And he is standing up there, and he does the Jeff Hardy pose. Oh, you know, he does the whole Jeff Hardy, fuck you, does the Jeff Hardy pose in the air. And Darby Allin comes diving off the top of the ladder with a swanton bomb. He got so much hang time that he almost did another flip. He landed horribly. He caught Jeff pretty good too, but he caught the chairs right on his hip. Not really on his tailbone so much. Maybe he did, but it was more like on his side and his hip. But he landed hard. I watch this. I'm thinking, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Darby, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? How many people do you think have said that before? I bet his parents said the same thing, too. Darby, what's wrong with you? Sting has to be thinking it every night when he watches this guy. This was an insane, insanely dangerous bump that could have gone so wrong so many different ways. Crazy. That was a brutal landing. Darby somehow brings himself into the ring. Jeff is already back. He's been rolled into the ring. And Jeff Hardy is laying, he's kind of out on the apron. And Darby goes up to the top rope and he's going to go for the coffin drop. And I remember this spot from the very first match that Darby Allin had on TV with Cody Rhodes. When he went for the coffin drop and Cody moved out of the way and there was nobody home. And Darby went thwap right on the apron and then bounced onto the floor. This was basically that spot. As Darby is coming off of the coffin drop, Jeff barely moved out of the way in time and Darby hit the apron and he fell to the ground down below. Crashed and burned. So now Jeff has a chance to regain control here in this match. The stairs that I mentioned earlier have now been turned over onto their side. Darby Allin has been laid out across the top part of the ring steps. Jeff Hardy goes up to the top rope. He goes for a swanton bomb of his own. And Darby moves out of the way this time. So Jeff Hardy, who was over 40 years old, who was moving around like he was 1,000 years old, like he was encased in a fucking tomb that they discovered somewhere on some other continent when they were digging for mummies, and they found this guy, and they unwrapped him, and now he's walking around. That's how he was moving around in the ring a few weeks ago, only a few weeks ago on TV. He looked terrible. Jeff Hardy is doing a swanton bomb from the top rope. He misses Darby, who rolled off the steps, and Jeff's body just crashes on the steps, and his body, like, bends over. I mean, these people are out of their minds. Absolutely out of their minds. So now Jeff is in, I'm sure he is, Jeff is in pain. He's on the floor. Back in the ring, Jeff is down, Darby goes up to the top rope. And Darby connects with a coffin drop. Hits his finish. Bam! Lands right on top of Jeff. Goes for the pin. 1, 2, and Jeff crucifixes him over and gets the surprise win. 1, 2, 3. Jeff Hardy wins. Jeff Hardy advances to the next round where he will meet Adam Cole next week on Dynamite in the semifinal round of the Owen Hart tournament. I was surprised. I was very surprised by that outcome. I said last week that Darby should go over here. This is not a case where Jeff Hardy should be beating Darby. I think Jeff should have put Darby over and sent Darby into the next round. Even if Darby went and lost to Adam Cole, Darby Allin is the one that should be pushed here. Now, maybe their idea is there's going to be more matches in the future between them, and then Darby can win their next. And that scares the fuck out of me, by the way. The idea that you're going to put these two back in the ring together again? I don't know how smart that is. But I did not agree with that finish. If it were me, and maybe it'll make sense next week. They'll do something or shoot some kind of angle or interference in the match with Hardy and Cole, because Adam Cole is not losing to Jeff Hardy, I don't believe, next week. Maybe it'll make sense. But if it were me, I would not have had Jeff Hardy win that match. I would have had Darby Allin go over. Jeff looked better than he did the last time we saw him, despite all the abuse he took in this match. Somehow, he was still moving around and looking better than he did the last time we saw him on TV. Now, maybe it was the adrenaline. Maybe it was the excitement. He really was excited to get in the ring with Darby. He knew this was a big spot. He had his working shoes on. You know, maybe he drank 5 cups of coffee. I don't know, whatever it was. Despite all of the abuse and the bumps and the punishment that he took in this match, Jeff still, to me, looked better than he did last time. So that was good. But again, Darby wasn't joking when he said that he was trying to land in the hospital. And we may end up finding out that he did. Maybe they took him for observation, because that chair bump that he took onto the chairs from the ladder, forget all the other stuff, that looked very, very painful. And so he's going to be feeling that, if he's not already feeling it, I'm sure he's already feeling it. But if he's not, he'll definitely be feeling it when the adrenaline wears off and he gets that come down. It's probably not going to be too fun for him to be sitting down on any airplanes or in a car or anything like that. That was a sick bump. But these two men, you know, again, they tempted fate in this match. It was a complete car crash where you couldn't look away. It was a stunt show, is the best way to describe this. And yet, despite, you know, the crazy bump and everything, and me being worried about Darby after that, I enjoyed it for what it was. This thing was a spectacle. It was 10 minutes of mayhem, nonstop mayhem, where these guys just were trying. It's like an episode of Jackass where they were trying to out Jackass the other. Who can do the crazier stunt bump and try not to get killed? It never felt to me like these two were in the ring trying to win a match in a tournament dedicated to Owen Hart, where the whole point was you got to win the match and then you can move on to the next round. It never felt like that to me, like they were out there trying to win the match. And that may be the biggest knock I can make on this. I enjoyed this for the spectacle that it was, but it never felt to me like they were out there to win. And when you're in a tournament like this, it should be all about winning. It should be about winning and trying not to kill yourself. You can kill your opponent, but that's, you know, how these tournament matches, I think, really should be booked and how they should feel. And the other thing also, and this is maybe a minor sort of thing, but one thing I have grown to hate, we've seen this in WWE as well, is the whole cradle out of a finishing maneuver. Somebody gets hit with a finish. You're supposed to be knocked out or knocked loopy. You get hit with someone's finish, they go for a pin. Maybe they kind of lay over you, and you can almost tell when the crucifix is coming. And they count to two, and the person is conscious enough to roll you up or cradle you up and kind of steal the pin from you. I'm not really a fan of that. I don't like that finish. And that's what they did here. So I don't know what else to say about this match that I haven't already said. It was insanity. If you didn't see it, go out of your way and watch it. You will not be able to look away. But if you're looking for psychology and you're looking for a story to be told here, there is none to be found. It was two guys who wanted to work together in the worst way, and I think the two of them bring out the worst in each other. That's maybe the best way to put it. For their own safety and health, they bring out the absolute worst in one another. But it resulted in an entertaining 10 minutes for the rest of us. I'm not the one who has to wake up tomorrow morning and pay the price for it. So to that end, it was entertaining enough. Now, Adam Cole, Red Dragon, and the Bucks, they came out on stage after. Cole was staring down Jeff Hardy ahead of their match coming up on Dynamite next Wednesday. So let's run down these previews. We have Rampage is coming up on Friday night. And again, Rampage is going to have an early start time of 5:30 p.m. Now, last week I mentioned that I wasn't sure what the Friday night stream was going to look like as far as what I would be reviewing. I ended up reviewing both shows, so we'll do that again this Friday as well. Owen Hart Cup, Riho, one-on-one with Ruby Soho. We have the TNT Championship on the line, Scorpio Sky defending against Frankie Kazarian. Death Triangle takes on The Butcher, The Blade, and Mark Quinn of Private Party. Shawn Spears one-on-one with Bear Boulder. And Jade Cargill will make an appearance on the show as well. That was taped tonight, not a live show on Friday. So a taped Dynamite at 5:30 Eastern. So you can have dinner. If you're out on the East Coast, you can have dinner and watch Dynamite at 5:30, or Rampage, rather, at 5:30. Dynamite next Wednesday. They're calling it Wild Card Wednesday. On Dynamite next week, we have Chris Jericho and William Regal having a face-to-face confrontation. Kyle O'Reilly takes on Rey Fénix in an Owen Hart tournament match. Britt Baker takes on the Joker in the women's Owen Hart tournament. I'm going to go ahead and say that I think the Joker is going to be Athena. I think the former Ember Moon makes her debut as the Joker in that match. Samoa Joe goes one-on-one with the Joker. On the men's side, Owen Hart tournament match. We know it's not Jay Lethal. We know it's not Sanjay Dutt. We know it's not Satnam Singh. I'm going to say that the Joker, next Friday or next Wednesday, which night is this? Excalibur was running through this so fast, I got both shows confused. Next Wednesday, I think it's going to end up being Cesaro. Cesaro is my pick. Claudio, I think, is going to be the Joker in that match. We have Adam Cole against Jeff Hardy in an Owen Hart Foundation semifinal match. We have Hangman Page against Konosuke Takeshita with CM Punk on commentary. Konosuke Takeshita. There we go. I'm butchering this time. Takeshita, I made comments about him last week. I was very impressed by what I saw of him on television last week. Kid is very impressive, so I think actually he and Hangman could go out there and have a fucking banger of a match next week. And again, I don't have an issue with Hangman being in there with somebody so low on the totem pole, because to me, I look at this like it's a warm-up match. It's like Punk with John Silver tonight. These are warm-up matches for these two heading into the big match at Double or Nothing. And Wardlow will take 10 lashes from MJF. So they're recycling the same angle they did with MJF and Cody Rhodes. Same exact angle. He's got to take 10 lashes. And if I remember, I remember that being a pretty good segment with Cody. But, you know, rehashing the same segment is kind of lame, I think. But anyway, that's your lineup for Rampage on Friday and Dynamite coming up next Wednesday. So let's take a look at the poll now. AEW Dynamite poll from Long Island, 85% thumbs up, with barely 8% thumbs in the middle and 7% thumbs down. That's with almost 1,500 votes in. I saw that Robbie, shout out to Robbie Fox, online, gave this show a resounding thumbs up. Robbie from Barstool, he was a big fan of the show tonight. He voted in the poll, and so should you, at Solomonster. On Twitter. That is the place to go. Got a Ray Phoenix fan in the chat here with the coup. Ray Phoenix, animo. I don't think Ray Phoenix is winning next week. But I guess we'll find out. So anyway, let's go to the Super Chats. Now I'm also seeing that Hikaru Shida might be out of the Owen. Is that true? Let's take a look here. Some breaking news here on the stream as it relates to Shida. Let's see if I can find... I don't see any confirmation of it, so... Who is Shida supposed to face in the tournament? I don't have the bracket in front of me. Well, I don't see anything about it just yet, but I'm seeing messages from you guys that apparently Shida is out of the Owens, so I'm sure you guys will update me in the chat. I don't see anything on it right now. I take it that she may have been hurt in her Philadelphia street fight, or maybe it's a storyline injury. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Go to your messages, and again, I will read all of your super chats here. I do appreciate it. I appreciate all the love and support here on the streams. Your super chats are very helpful and very very much appreciated. Groovy Goose dropping $4.99. I'm applying for Sonya's old job. Can I use you for a reference? And or do you have a jacket that I can borrow? In all seriousness, here's a good stream. Thank you, Groovy Goose. I would take you over Sonya Deville in that spot. I'm a little sick and tired. Thankfully, Sonya Deville is no longer an official. She is no longer a WWE official on television. So apparently, is it Shida being replaced by Chris Statlander in the tournament? Well, it's funny, though, if that is true. And again, I haven't seen that confirmed yet, but if Statlander is replacing her, Chris Statlander would have been my pick probably to win the entire thing if she was in the tournament in the first place. So now if she's in the tournament, that, I don't know, that could change things a little bit. That could change things a little bit. Thunder Knight with the $5 super chat. We've got buy or sell on the bigger moment, CM Punk's AEW debut or Cody Rhodes WWE return. Now, CM Punk in Chicago, without a doubt. CM Punk at the United Center coming back after 7 years in Chicago. It's one of the biggest moments in wrestling. C-Lab, 4421, stopping by to show my appreciation. Thanks for all the content you create. When is the next episode of Sound Off Gamer? As soon as I am able to record it, which I'm hoping is in these next 2 days... Uh-oh. There he is. Bratty Solomonster. Shooting his friend. Thank you, Jared. Jared was at the show. I'm going to read Jared's super chat here in a bit. Matthew Dinkins. $9.99. Russo on a pole. Super chat. You see Vince Russo online the other day talking about how he was exchanging messages. Vince McMahon wanted him to watch the show on a trial basis for 2 weeks. Oh my God. I got a good laugh out of that. Matthew says, when is Kenny Omega cleared? How the tournament is set up, I could see him being the Joker and then facing Adam Cole in the finals. Kenny Omega is not the Joker. Kenny Omega is not due back for maybe a month. I mean, it's tough. He just had another surgery, so it's not going to be for another month or two. He might be able to be back in time for the Forbidden Door, but he's not going to be the Joker in this tournament. Mad King 1984, what does New York City think about Long Island? Well, that depends on who you talk to. I like Long Island, and I don't have an issue with Long Island. I may end up on Long Island before long. But there are people who aren't too fond of Long Island. When I used to hang out in the city, we would have the bridge and tunnel crowd who would come in to the bars and everything. You would have these people from Long Island, and it was like, uh-oh. We don't need these pretentious people from Long Island. But as I have matured now, I don't have an issue with it. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, do you think that they will make Adam Page go full-on heel after Double or Nothing, or will he just shake Punk's hand after the match? I don't think he's going full-on heel. So that answers your question there. Lil Alien Boy. I haven't heard from Lil Alien Boy in a while. Jared M, who is already a channel member, but anytime a channel member drops a message, it says that they just became a member. Jared's been a member for 13 months. Lil Alien Boy says, great show tonight. Really felt like Jeff passed the torch to the new generation. I don't know about that. Could hear the age difference in the crowd during the match. Older pulling Jeff, younger pulling Darby. I did notice that. I don't know about this whole passing the torch thing. Passing the torch, usually you're putting the other guy over. So I don't know that I would say that. But there was definitely, you could tell, yeah, there were older fans who were there for Jeff, cheering Jeff, and then the younger audience. It's like the younger audience, Darby is what Jeff Hardy used to be to the younger fans, right? Now that's kind of what Darby is to the newer, younger, current fans. Nick Grosso, what a terrible finish. Darby should have won. There was no reason for Jeff to win. Good way to make one of your pillars and his finisher look bad. Yeah, I mean, that's just one of the reasons why I hate that whole... I just talked about it. I hate the whole cradle or crucifix right after a finish. It just completely no-sells the finish. Joseph Brooks, $9.99. Buy, rent, sell on the greatest who never win the WWE title. Roddy Piper, Jake the Snake Roberts, or Owen Hart. Also, just wanted to say Mr. Perfect as an honorable mention. I mean, of the ones you mentioned, I got a buy on Piper. I would buy on Piper and rent on Owen, sell on Jake. Jake didn't need the world title. He didn't need it. I mean, Piper didn't need it either to get over or stay over. But I would go Piper, Owen, Jake, probably. Dry chicken without flavor. Long Island, New York is trash city. MJF, King Garbage. Rodimus Prime with the $20 super chat drop. Fun show tonight. A wild main event. Plus Hook and Danhausen are the team I knew I never wanted. I will take it. Anti-M Bishop 07, a solid monster. Tonight's show was great. Big up to Strong Island. The tournament has been good so far. Early Rampage equals another low rating. Yeah, Rampage did its lowest ever rating. I think it was about 290,000 or so. 292,000, I think, on Friday. And, of course, I saw all the idiots online talking about the Rampage rating. Ignoring the fact that Rampage went on at 5:30 in the afternoon. It's the same thing when SmackDown is occasionally bumped to FS1. When baseball would be on Fox and SmackDown would be on FS1. I mean, it still did a much bigger number than Rampage would because it's WWE is always going to have the bigger numbers advantage there. But the SmackDown numbers would also be down by a lot. And you just take it and throw it away because it's a different network on a different time. It's really, really late. In this case, it's super early. I mean, and people make a big deal out of, oh my God, the sky is falling. Rampage did a horrible number at 5:30 in the fucking evening, which is even earlier if you go out west. It's one of those numbers, you just take it and throw it away. And the only thing you hope for is that when Rampage is back in its normal spot, they can get back the audience that they had before. I think it's getting bounced again next week as well. It might be, actually, I think next week it's at 7 o'clock. So this Friday, Rampage is at 5:30 Eastern. I believe next Friday, it's at 7 Eastern. So they're not even going to be back in their regular spot until, I guess, what would that be? That'll be the Friday either before Double or Nothing or after Double or Nothing. I don't know. Whatever that Friday show is, though, before Double or Nothing, I think it's the May 27th show, I won't be here for it. We got House of Glory that night, so just remember that. Joseph Brooks, though, is up next with the $4.99 Super Chat. Oh, it's Bully the Clown with his little red nose. Look how cute he looks. Bully can do tricks. Stephen Chappa, he loves it. He loves Bully the Clown. Steven, thank you. Get to your super chat here in a minute. But we have a weird question, though, from Joseph Brooks. Is there such a thing as there being the greatest short match of all time? If there is, one of them would be Owen Hart and the 1-2-3 Kid in the King of the Ring tournament in 1994. I think that was 3 minutes. That might have been the best 3-minute match I've ever seen. It might be that match. So yes, I would say yes. Big Armada 1988 with the $5. I'm really getting sick of the picture-in-picture stuff where most of the good parts of the match happens. Yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan of that either. Stephen Fees thought somebody was going to die in the main event. Yeah, I mean, it's what they do. They went out there with a mission to try to outdo each other. And it's a miracle that they were both able to walk out on their own 2 feet. Anti-M Bishop, as for the Jokers, Candice LeRae and Chris Hero. No, I don't think Chris Hero would be very surprising to me. Candice is possible. I was thinking Candice last week, but now I'm gonna stick with my picks. I'm gonna stick with Athena and Cesaro as my picks for the Jokers. Dry Chicken, Tony Khan better not wait too long for a streaming deal with HBO Max. Yeah, the quicker he can get embedded into the Warner family even more, the better off that he'll be. EJ Slemp, a few weeks ago, I mentioned Starks and Joe as a tag team. I think they would be better opponents. Do you think Joe and Team Taz will eventually feud? I think eventually everybody is going to feud with everybody in this company. Probably. Groovy Goose, Joker predictions, Claudio and Athena, book it, bro. Gee, I wonder where you got that from, Groovy Goose. Liquid Sharingan, $5 super chat. Joker predictions, Athena and Omega. Just got a gut feeling about Omega. Could be wrong, though. I think you're wrong. Dry chicken without flavor. Next week's Joker, Scott Steiner and Tessa Blanchard. Oh, you nailed it. I'm sure Tessa is just going to walk right on out there. She's going to get a hero's welcome. Maybe now we know why all of a sudden she's out of WOW Women of Wrestling, possibly. Maybe she got the call from Tony Khan. We need a Joker. She's on her way to AEW. I'm sure that'll get just a fantastic reaction. What could go wrong? Nick Grosso, the Jokers, I'm going to say Johnny and Candice. Tomas, shut up and take my money, man. I can only handle so much content, dude. Tomas, I love you, brother. Thank you, sir. Dry chicken without flavor. Next week's Jokers, for real this time. Killer Cross and Nixon Newell. Yeah, we haven't heard about Tegan Nox in a while. We've got Emiliana. Emiliana with a 1999 super chat. Thank you, my friend. Wow. Very nice of Emiliana. And Shinakuma dropping $5 as well. Uffman Entertainment with $5. PW Insider is reporting that Sheeta is out of the Owen due to an undisclosed injury from the Philadelphia street fight. So there you go. Kairu Sheeta, out of the Owen. Frank Aquilino, MJF in Long Island is the new Bret Hart in Canada. Oh, that's slanderous right there. He wishes he got a reaction like Bret got in Canada. Emiliana, $5 super chat. When Jericho mentioned Eddie's wife, I remember thinking, Moxley, he's talking about you. And then he showed up doing another BC... Oh, because I messed up earlier. Well, thank you anyway. Thank you for the double super chat. Hyru. Yes, Solomonster. We are all fans of Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter and their undeniable thickness. Well, we know what Hyru is thinking about. Naif Al-Safar, thank you for the $1.99 and the 99 cents. I appreciate that. Jared M. There's that $45. What's going on here? Oh. I was looking at Turtlehead. Jared M. Just got home from the show. The crowd was Attitude Era hot all night. I hope it came across on TV that way. Jeff looked healthier than he has in years. Shocked that Jeff went over, but I'm sure this isn't the end to Jeff against Darby. Sadly, I don't think it is either, but I say sadly because if that's what they did in their first match, what the hell are they going to do in their second match? What structure could they climb on top of? What could they possibly climb on top of in their second match? We've already seen people climb on top of the entrance tunnels. To me, that would be almost underwhelming. We've seen Sting do balcony dives. What could these two do in their next match to top what they did tonight? Just to kind of end it all. It's kind of scary to think about. Jeffrey Free says, I love you. Well, I appreciate that. I care for you. Thank you, Jersey. Hyru says, my pick for the Jokers, Johnny Gargano and Taya Valkyrie. I thought Taya was back in Impact. Steven Chapp, a $30 Bully the Clown super chat. Thanks for the best Wednesday night review as I was out for a run training to close a team marathon. Always got my Solomonster reviews handy. Well, Steven Chapp, thank you. Steven, thank you. I appreciate that, and I'm glad that the streams can help keep you company and kill some time for you. Do not pass go with the $5 super chat. I'm more shocked that Ibushi is 40. That dude does not age. I've always been shocked when I look up how old he is, because, like I said, I mean, he doesn't look a day over 30, let alone 40. Ray Wrighton. What's going on, Ray? Shout out to Ray. Long Island isn't New York. Five boroughs only. Everything else is New Jersey 2.0. All the people in Albany are not going to want to hear that. They're not going to be happy with you. All those upstate people, Albany, Rochester. Ooh. Them are fighting words. They don't want to hear that. Darth Panic, thank you for the five, brother. Lakers Pats, done with jujitsu. Can you review the show again? Sure. All you got to do when we're done here is hit play. Review the entire thing for you all over again. In the exact same verbiage, in fact. I'm telling you, when you hit that play button, it'll start all over again. Hey, Random, what's going on? Steven says his body, Ibushi's body's health status is sadly 40 years old. I think you're right. Paul Heyman. Actually, we had a whole bunch of super chats come in just now. We just had a whole bunch of them come in. I'm turning off the music for a second. I want to focus on these super chats here. We'll start with Turtlehead. Underestimated is your ability to remember certain matches on certain pay-per-views. I consider myself a fan, but you're a wealth of wrestling knowledge. Well, that might be the kindest thing you've ever said to me. I appreciate that. Shout out, by the way, to Tom Talks Rubbish. You missed it. I sat down for an interview with Tom on his YouTube channel. I know he's been, we've been trying to nail this down for a while now. Went up earlier today. It's about 35 minutes. I probably talked in that interview with Tom more about the podcast itself and my preparation for it and my thought process on what goes into it more than I have in any other interview that I've done, including the interview I did with Chris Van Vliet last year. So, it's a good interview if you are interested. Again, Tom Talks Rubbish is the YouTube channel. And that went up a little bit earlier today. So show some love for Tom on his channel. He does good work. Dry chicken without flavor. Eddie Kingston missed an opportunity to pull off a Will Smith slap to Chris Jericho. Keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth. You got to say it like Will Smith did. He goes, keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth. And then Chris Rock is like, I am. He didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to do. And now Will Smith is banned from the Oscars for the next 10 years because no matter what the guy says, you can't go on stage and slap the shit out of somebody. So now you're banned. I hope it was worth it. And Paul Heyman. Can you see the Joker being Johnny Drip Drip? You know, I hadn't thought about him. He's kind of been off my radar. Yeah, it's possible. It is possible. I'm going to stick with Claudio, though, for my pick. But yeah, John Morrison absolutely is a possibility. He's a free agent. I don't believe he's under contract anywhere else. An actual thoughtful super chat from Paul Heyman. Feel like up is down, left is right, the world is upside down. This is crazy. And now his wife is divorcing him. Well, that's what he gets for defending his wife. I hope he had a prenup. Probably not. The ones with the most money usually never do. Unless you're Bill Gates. Bill Gates had a prenup. I'm not sure if Will Smith did, though. Oh, my goodness. Ray is still... She's still fighting people about this New York City thing in the chat. She'll kick your ass. Don't fight with her. She'll throw down with you. If I have to pick who goes over in that fight, I'm going to always side with her. But anyway, let's calm the tension down a little bit because now it's time for something that we could all get behind. It's time for Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
everyone's favorite segment where we get to be the booker here on the stream. Oh, we are so close, too. We're so close to hitting that Super Chat goal that we hit last week. We're a little under it right now. We'll see who gets the last word in on that. But right now, we begin as we do. We had a men's Owen Hart tournament, and we had a women's Owen Hart tournament. We had matches on Dynamite tonight. Well, much like that, we're going to start with the men. We're going to book our own tournament matches. How about that? Don't book like Bruce, Miguel. Oh, gee, thanks for the advice. I'll try. I'll do my best. We got Jushin Thunder Liger. There's a legend for you. That's the image from his one and only WWE match. Triple H had the great sense to bring in Jushin Thunder Liger for that one TakeOver show. I was at that show, TakeOver in Brooklyn. I can always say that I was there live for Jushin Liger's one and only WWE match. You can't say that. Who's Liger going to be in there with? Liger is a legend. Liger in the ring with almost anybody is going to be fucking great. We got Liger going one-on-one with Hulk Hogan. You know, a lot of it really depends on where that match takes place. When Hogan was in Japan, Hogan had his working shoes on. You go back and watch those Hulk Hogan Japanese matches. Hogan against Inoki, Hogan against Stan Hansen, Hogan against Muda. Japanese Hogan was like a machine over there. He was doing drop toe holds and all kinds of stuff. He was brawling on the outside of the ring, picking up chairs and shit. Hogan in Japan against the Jushin Liger, actually, I would pay to see that match. I like that match. I don't know what you people in the chat are talking about. I think these guys back in their prime, and if you do that match over in Japan, I think that's a fucking great match. That's a main event on any show right there. So, that's a winner. That gets the winning bell. Now we switch on over to the ladies. We'll see if we can have some equal luck here. I like that match. Hogan and Liger. That is not the match I was expecting. But you know how it ends, though. Hogan with the Axe Bomber. It's the only way for that match to go down. We begin on the women's side with our old pal. Look who it is. It's Delusional Dixie. Dixie Carter. We're whistling Dixie here on the stream tonight. She's like sad, like she's about to cry. She must have seen that Raw show from the other night. Dixie Carter. Well, we have to go on here. She needs an opponent. I love it. Delusional Dixie. I got so much good content over the years on my show from Delusional Dixie. I love her. Dixie Carter, one-on-one. I was going to say Kane, but holy shit. Is that Tori? Yes, it is. It is Tombstone Tori. I think Dixie Carter against Kane would have been the better match. Dixie Carter against Tombstone Tori. Well, at least Hogan and Liger was an interesting one. At least we got Hogan and Liger. Shin Akuma just dropped a $5 super chat. No message, just showing some love and support here on the stream. Shin, thank you. Whatever happened to Tori? I don't know what happened. They should do one of those Where Are They Now features on Tori. I don't know. Tori looks like somebody who would probably own like her own yoga studio. I have no idea what she's up to in life, but if anybody looks it up, I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts. She probably either runs a yoga studio or has some kind of like life coaching business or something, you know, namaste, something like that. I'll bet you she's doing something like that. Is Katie Vick in Be the Booker? Can't say. We'll have to find out one day, I guess. Am I sure I'm not Russo in a costume? I don't think I've ever been as insulted as I am right now. Do I talk like Russo? I wouldn't be able to hide the accent if I had his accent, so no. Is Moopy in Be the Boy? You mean Moppy? Look at this. He said Moopy. Have you been drinking? There's no Moopy, there's no Schmoopy. It might be the Booker. Oh my God, look at this. From her Wikipedia page. She opened her own yoga studio in Portland. What did I say? What did I tell you? What did I tell you? I told you. Some people you can just look at and you know. I must have seen a set, maybe like back when she was in WWE, maybe they did some kind of a segment on her or something and she was into like stretching and yoga and stuff. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, but I haven't thought about that woman since I probably saw her in WWE. I had no idea what she was up to. I told you she had some kind of a yoga studio or something going on. According to Wikipedia, she owns a yoga studio in Portland. I told you. I told you. I knew it. Do we have a Friday the 13th this month? Oh, that's a good question. Well, today is, we do. I think we, actually Friday. I think this Friday, isn't it? I think this Friday is Friday the 13th. Might have to talk to our buddy Steve about that as far as the artwork. Why don't I have a New York accent? I do. I'm sure people who live in other states can probably hear it. It's just not as pronounced as Mr. Russo. Bro, I don't have that New York accent, bro. Eating New York pizza and New York bagels, bro. I go down, I read the Daily News and the Daily Post and the Newsday thing, and I watch Eyewitness News on the TV, bro. And then I book and I call Vince McMahon. He doesn't take my calls, bro. I said, Vince McMahon, I helped you once. I could help you again, bro. I got all the time in the world. I'm sitting at home, bro. All I do all day is I sit at home and I talk to Disco Inferno. I have nothing else going on in my life, bro. I sent him an email. How did I get his email? I guessed what it was. I sat there for 6 hours one day, bro, guessing the extensions to the email addresses. I typed in WWE.com. I typed in WWEcorp.com. Eventually, bro, I sent Vince McMahon an email and didn't get a bounce back. And I said, jackpot, I found his email address. And I said, bro, I'm willing to help you out. So full of shit. Yeah, I'm sure Vince McMahon is interacting with Vince Russo over emails if he hasn't had more important things to do. Bro, I eat lox on my bagel, bro. Is Regis in the Hall of Fame? Is he? Is he in the celebrity wing? I think he is. I don't really pay attention to the celebrity wing anymore, so I don't know. He should be, though, if he's not. Somebody mentioned Arsenio Hall in the chat a little while ago. He should be in there, too. He used to have wrestlers on his show all the time. Yeah, Macho wasn't the only one on Arsenio. Arsenio had, there was the infamous interview with Hogan where they thought Hogan was coming on to apologize and admit to his steroid use. And then at the last minute, Hogan had a change of heart and said the only time he ever took steroids was three times in the mid-80s to help heal faster from some injuries. He's full of shit. Hogan was on there. Savage was on there. I think Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan were on there together. The Warrior was on there. You need to look this up if it's on YouTube somewhere. I'm almost positive that the Twin Towers were on Arsenio. I know for a fact that at least it was Akeem and Slick. I don't know if Boss Man was there. But you got to find the video. If it's online somewhere, you got to find the video of that. Here's Akeem, right? Who's supposed to be, he's pretending to be black. And he's coming out here and he's dancing and he's saying, you know, right on, my brother. And he's like, and here's Arsenio Hall who has to interview this guy. It's completely preposterous. But Arsenio, like Regis, he gave a platform to these wrestlers on, you know, mainstream television when not everybody would do that. So for that reason alone, I'd put him in the Hall of Fame. Bad News Brown was on there too. That's right. That's right, he did. He interviewed Jason Voorhees. That was one of my favorite interviews that he ever did. He interviewed Jason. Jason just sat there. He just sat there with the mask on. I want to say that was before the eighth movie, right? It was somewhere, like, he was there to promote maybe Jason part seven or eight, I think. The Joker will be Gunner. No, I think Gunner, before long, Gunner will be controlling his narrative. All right, one last look at the poll. At Sala Monster, this was a much more enjoyable, I thought, and interesting and fun episode of Dynamite as compared to the one that we got last week. And this poll here seems to reflect that sentiment. I don't seem to be alone in that opinion. So, at Sala Monster is the place where you can go. Yeah, Jason Takes Manhattan, that was part eight. That's what I thought. So, that was part eight where he's roaming the streets of Manhattan. I almost said Manhasset. That's another film. Jason Voorhees roams the streets of Manhasset, New York. And then Ray Wrighton, pops out of nowhere because she can't stand Long Island and she just kills everybody out there. She becomes the new superhero in these movies. No, part nine was Jason Goes to Hell. Is me every Monday night at 8 o'clock. All right, I will see you guys on Friday night. I believe it is Friday the 13th, so that'll be fun. Rampage at 5:30. I will try to watch that before SmackDown. When SmackDown's over, we'll go live. So come hang out with me on a Friday night. If you are a channel member, be aware that I put a post up a couple of days ago. If you haven't seen it, it's up in the community section. Posted, and this is for all channel members, regardless of what tier you are on, for the next members-only exclusive Q&A video, me answering your questions. I already have 50-plus questions in the thread. I'm going to put my notes with all the questions together in the next day or so. So one last shot. If you haven't gotten your question in, go to the thread, leave a question, and in the next few days, I am hopefully going to be recording the video, and that will be exclusively for channel members. So if you are part of our family here on YouTube, I thank you. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. Thank you for all the support, and I will see you back here live on Friday night for more Sound Off, talking SmackDown and Rampage. Until then, take care, guys.